this wonderful feast day, dear faithful, of our heavenly patron here in Milwaukee, St. Hugh of Lincoln. St. Hugh was an interesting character and somebody that it does well for all of us to commit to memory and to learn about his life and his holiness and the remarkable things that he had done during his life, because it is through that knowledge of him more intimately that we are connected to, that we remember to ask his intercession for us, that we remember that he has special guide and protection over us, because we feel that more intimately the more we know him. And so today I want to take a little bit of time to talk about our patron, St. Hugh. At the age of 8 years old, Hugh, who was born a very pious child to a fairly noble family, his mother died when he was only eight. And this set him on his pathway towards his religious life. Because his father, who was a good and holy man, but whose profession was that of a knight, found that once his wife had died, it was going to be impossible to fulfill his duties as a soldier and as a knight of the king, and also the duties of the domestic life, the care of the household, and all the things that went with that. And so he looked to do what was best for his young son, Hugh. And so, seeing that not far away, there was a community of canons regular, these religious men, who at the cathedral, he sent him off to board there and to study there. And so Hugh embarked on this journey of his first taste, if you will, of the religious life. Now, he was just a young boy, and they saw great promise in him, and in a way overstepped their bounds in their care after the young child. He was only a kid. But they saw the potential for a religious vocation, and the superior of the community at that time thought that the best way to foster this would be to be extremely hard on the young man. And so he told St. Hugh outright that there was going to be no laughing, no joking, no playing, no anything like that. He used to do his duties, he used to do his studies, he used to do his prayers, and he used to live that community life without any kind of real outlet whatsoever. He even said, "Hugh, I bring you up for Christ. No jokes for you now." And many around him feared that this would crush the poor boy, that it would be ultimately the loss of his vocation and his destruction. And they didn't want to lose a promising vocation, but the superior wouldn't hear anything of it and continued to do so. But in spite of that, Hugh endured. He showed his true character and true love of God, that even in a very harsh environment, he was able to foster his soul and to survive. And he took all of that in and offered up willingly as an offering to our Lord. At the age of 18, you know, it became his choice to now what to do with the rest of his life. And he chose to stay in the religious life, but to leave that section of canons regular and rather go to a different place. And he entered into the Grand Chartreuse, the mother house of the Carthusians. And it was there he found his greatest joy and greatest pleasure in his life. He arrived there and right away knew that he was at home. The clean, crisp air, the quiet and the silence and the schedule and the prayers and all that was exactly what his soul longed for. And that even though it was viewed as one of the more strict religious orders, at the same time, for him, having come from such an environment of such rigor, it was a very light burden for him to carry. Moreover, the setting for him was so beautiful for anybody there, really, because it was set high up in the Alps, and every day he would see the magnificence of nature there as part of the canvas of creation of the God that he prayed to. He was there for 10 blissful years until finally our Lord called him away, because as oftentimes happens, the will of God is not always what we just simply desire for ourselves. He called him away in the means of setting up a new convent for monks in going to England. Henry II, who was king at that time, he had a very harsh penance given to him by the priest or the bishop at that time, because of his having killed the Archbishop St. Thomas Becket. And having repented, he had many aspects of public penance, one of which happened to be the setting up of a monastery in the town of Witham. And so the king set about to faithfully execute that, and he needed to set up a religious order there, and he decided that it would be the Carthusians that would come in there. And so he sent to Grand Chartreuse to send a monk to establish the first monastery of Carthusians in England. And Hugh was chosen to be the one to set it up. He traveled to Witham and found it to be the stark opposite of his home in Chartreuse. It was a flat, plain area in the southwest of England that was very plain and very gray and very, you know, wet and dour in its appearance. But yet it was God's will. And so he had a placidus joy in his heart to do that. The people there, on their part, they were not very happy to have him arrive, because they thought having the Carthusians come in was too strict, and that would rub off on their, when they would go to attend the church, that everything would be so down and strict and overly rigorous that they wouldn't be able to bear it up. And so they tried to, in a way, stand before in the way of this construction of the monastery. But in time, Hugh won them over, because he was such the sweet disposition about him. He was such a charming person, and they saw him every day. They were edified by his prayers. They saw him working so hard, carrying the rocks upon his own shoulders, mixing the mortar for the walls with his own hands. They would come and talk to him, and they were greeted with great kindness, and they were greeted with great pious words, and that everything about him seemed to win the people of Witham over, until the end there wasn't anybody who any longer opposed the construction of this monastery, and it became a great house of religion for the people of the city. There he remained, and as he was there taking care of these people, the reputation that he had and his piety began to spread beyond just the Carthusians and beyond the city of Witham. Eventually, it got all the way to the king himself. He learned of this great prior of the monks, and he realized that they really did have a saintly man on his hands. One time, Henry II, he was on a ship traveling across the sea back towards England from France, and while he was going, all of a sudden a great tempest rose up. And it seemed that certainly the ship would be lost. And at that, Henry fell upon his knees, looked up in the pouring rain to heaven, and cried out, beseeching God to save him. And and what he asked for was the intercession of a man still living, but known so much for his holiness. He cried out, "O God, whom the prior of Witham serves, and his merits and intercession, save me." And sure enough, the storm calmed down, and they were able to make port unscathed. God working miracles on behalf of Hugh, even before he was dead. Later, the king, after having been saved there, and when it came to the realization that he needed to appoint a bishop to Lincoln, even though he had left it vacant for over 2 years so that he could collect all of the monies that came into the diocese out of his own greed, he realized he couldn't do that forever. And so he asked them to vote for a bishop, and he recommended Hugh for its post. They voted and they brought him in and told Hugh that he was indeed chosen. And Hugh rejected this honor and said, "No, I can't do that. Besides, your election was not a valid election." The king said, "Well, why not? We voted for you, and and here you are. And he said, because it wasn't free. You recommended me to these men, and by doing so, you influenced them. They must go away, and they must vote again. So the king begrudgingly sends the clergy of Lincoln away, but they come back with the same verdict, unanimous this time, that Hugh is to be the bishop of Lincoln, a post which he takes up. And there immediately becomes the thorn in the king's side. But a thorn that, in a strange way, it would be missed if it wasn't there. You see, unlike so many others who represented the church, who butted heads with the king, or they had one of two choices. They butted heads with the king, and oftentimes it meant that they drew the ire and the consequences of standing up for the church. Or they went along with the will of the king, which meant that they shirked their duties. Yet Hugh somehow managed to find a way to do his duty well and still remain in the good graces of the king, no matter what happened. Again, it was due to his charm and his tact and his sweetness that he had about him. Soon after he was elected, right away, he showed this, because when he took possession of the see, he right away excommunicated one of the high-ranking members of the king's court, because he was the head of forestry in Lincolnshire, and he was extraordinarily cruel and extraordinarily unjust to all of the peasant people. So St. Hugh, seeing that he could not correct the man any more than he already had, excommunicated him. Henry, of course, was not happy about this, but having upon visited St. Hugh, was won over by his charm. He had, as he sat there on his horseback, he had, because he was in Lincoln hunting, he had on his finger a bandage, which at that time they had used leather for. And he sat there in silence, staring at the bishop, waiting for some sort of apology for excommunicating, which was not going to come, of course. And during that time, he asked for a stitch of twine to sew up and tighten up his leather bandage. The archbishop looked at him and just says, "You remind me so much of your cousins," because they had been tailors, and the king burst out laughing and couldn't help but be won over by the bishop in that moment. Another such occasion was for the successor of Henry II, which was Richard the Lionheart. Hugh refused to raise funds for his war, and it drew a great ire from the king, who, of course, if you know anything about Richard the Lionheart, he never met a war that he didn't like. And so in not being able to raise funds from this large diocese, he sent, in a moment of anger, away a large army of soldiers to go to Lincoln and apprehend and arrest the bishop for his disobedience to the ruling of the king. And so as this band of soldiers came towards the city of Lincoln, which I was there a couple of years ago, and you can see from far off, it's not a lot of trees, and as you kind of come over the hills, you can see the city laying out before you. As they were coming towards that city and approaching, all of a sudden they heard the bells of all of the churches begin to ring in the city. They're wondering, what was that? And when they got to the city walls, they found out that the bells were ringing because they had seen them coming from afar off and knew what was happening. And Hugh ordered the bells rung and was in the middle of the process of solemn excommunication of the men coming to dare to apprehend the bishop of the city. And there, when they arrived, not only did they meet that kind of frightening scene of excommunication, but also a great band of faithful from Lincoln, who so loved the bishop that they were all standing there ready to protect him at all costs from the soldiers. Befuddled and confused and not knowing what to do at all, they immediately turned around and returned back to London. Well, this word got back to Richard the Lionheart, and he could not stand for it, and he was extraordinarily angry. And he himself was on his way back to London, and when having arrived, Hugh traveled down to the city to visit him and came there, and Richard was extraordinarily mad. But being a spoiled king, what did he do? He acted like a child. He folded his arms and refused to greet the bishop that stood before him. He acted like a little kid, not daring to talk and giving the cold shoulder to this holy man of God. And so Hugh just stood there and stared at him for several minutes' time. And finally he said, "You need to give me a kiss." The king said, "No, I will not give you a kiss. You do not deserve it." And Hugh said, "Of course I deserve it. I've traveled a great distance to come and see you." Again, the charm melted even the stony heart of King Richard, and he burst out laughing and embraced the bishop, forgiving all. Hugh didn't waste a moment's time, though, to get right back at his work and turned to the king and said, "Please walk with me." And taking him aside, walked along the shore with him and said, "How is your soul? You are a parishioner of mine, and I have to have care after you." Well, the king looked at him and he said, "My soul is at ease, although I must admit, sometimes it is disturbed by some anger by those who refuse to honor my position as king," a kind of slight dig at St. Hugh. He didn't mind that, of course, and he said, "Ha, is that all? And yet I hear daily complaints of your oppression of the poor and your abuse of power, and also that you haven't kept your marriage vow. What do you say of these things?" The king just was in absolute shock that he would know about these things and point them out to him so boldly, and he had no answer for it whatsoever. And with that, St. Hugh walked away, needing to say no more, as he had given sufficient reason of reflection to the king at that moment in time. After having walked away, and the king standing there in utter confusion on the shore, one of his aides came up to him, and he turned to him and he said, "If all bishops in my realm were like this man, kings and princes would be powerless against them." A charm that couldn't help winning every day. As for the people of Lincoln, they loved their bishop. He was so pious and prayerful. He rooted out immorality throughout the city and the diocese. He curbed the slothfulness and abuse of the clergy by regular clerical visits, knowing all of his priests, stopping by their churches on a regular basis. And he helped build the very beautiful cathedral that exists to this day in that city. Even nature itself could not resist St. Hugh, his faithful swan walking by him every single day and coming to eat right out of his hand. And then, as oftentimes is pictured, sticking his beak up the sleeve of the bishop so that he could pet his head. The swan was a peculiar animal because it was so devoted to the holy bishop that not only would it come and walk but with him and to be seen strolling around with him, but when people would come that were potentially bothersome to the bishop, it would run after them and chase them away so that they could leave the bishop in peace during his prayers. And it's with all of that that he one day finally died, and we, as we know, became the great saint before us. Today is the 30th anniversary of our little church, St. Hugh of Lincoln. I've been lucky enough to be here for the last 8 years and gotten to know so many of you over that time. I can't help in seeing our small church, knowing the people who make it up, to have drawn so many parallels from the life of our patron and our own little group here. Yes, like the bishop, we are made up of many characters, and they are at times, sometimes pushing against one another or even the things that we want to do. But there's a charm, because that's just human nature itself, that we have people with different opinions and different ways of life and different thoughts as to how things should be done. But it is a charm because everybody goes about it with the same intention the mindset of love of God before all else. And it's a charm because for those who come who are new, they are invited in so warmly by our faithful. They come and they can't help but walk away and realize that there really is something special here. Something that has been built up over time. Something that has been built up by hard work. Very much in parallel to that holy bishop that is our patron. Everything we see in this little building has been constructed and worked out through sweat and tears and blood by the hard work of our faithful volunteers. Everything that we have for the liturgy has been practiced time and time again by those willing to devote their time between servers and choir. Everything that we have in way of the little extras, the decorations, the furnishings, even the celebration afterwards, is all work and labor of love, the people that make up our church. The liturgy in all its splendor for such a small place, because we, as a whole, love God by that means. This is what has come from the early days in its infancy 30 years ago and grown organically into our congregation today. Never let that fall away from your memory. Not as a way to pat yourself on the back, because that does us no good whatsoever, but a way to look to the future. Who else can help? Which of you can be the next to fill in gaps that inevitably come about? Which of you can insert your own little bit to our church to make up its structure moving forward? Your prayers, your sacrifices, your time, your efforts, your talents, whatever they may be. How can you serve God through the vessel that he's given us? Because it's that that makes it so special. It's that that with this small congregation that we have, we're able to do so much. It's that constant mindset of people realizing it's not just a building, it's not just where I go, but it's my church, it's my family, it's my God. That type of devotion is what marks us not merely as St. Hugh's the chapel, but truly the children of that good and holy bishop. And God bless you in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Ghost.